So today's Gemara starts with Agadata. Tanya.
What
does Gimel Amalav? Gimel Amalav, there's two dots about 60% of the way down the page. Tanya. In the right. Amar Rabbi Yossi says, he tells a personal story. One time I was walking along on the road. I went into one of the ruins of Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yossi lived in the Derech after the Churban, so Nebuch Yerushalayim was full of ruins. And he went into one of those ruins, Lisbal, to Davin. Eliyahu HaNavi, of all people, he came and he waited for me. Rashi says, note this, Rashi on the word v'shamar. V'shamar over here does not mean guarding. It means v'himtin. It means he waited for me. And Rashi brings the Gemara Sanhedrin, the Gemara Mavakama, and a couple of psukim, where we find that the word shamar has this meaning. You have, in where is this? Vayeshev, thank you, right. Vayeshev, where Yosef told the dreams to his brother, it says, V'aviv Shamar Es Hadavar. And it means he was waiting to see what would happen. So Shamar Leon Pesach, Leon Avi was waiting for me. Until I finished my tefillah. When I finished my tefillah, Amarli, so a beautiful conversation unfolds. Elion Avi greets Rabbi Yosi and he says, Shalom Alech Rabbi. Says he greets him. V'amarti loy. So I said back to him, Shalom Alecha, Rabbi Umayri. It's pretty impressive that he called Rabbi Yossi Rabbi. Says Eliyahu HaNavi. Rabbi Yossi responds with something more. Peace unto you, Rabbi Umayri. V'amar li. And then Eliyahu HaNavi asked Rabbi Yossi, Bini, my son, Mipnei ma nechnasta l'chur v'zoy. What are you doing in this ruins? Amarti loy. So I said, L'hespalo. I went into Davin. V'amarli, Eliyahu HaNavi told me, Ha'yilachol espal b'derech. You shouldn't have gone in. You should have davened on the road. You were on the road and traveling. You should have just stood on the side of the road and davened your tefillah over there, rather than go into a churva. V'amarti loy, so I said to Eliyahu HaNavi, Mesiyari yisi shom yavsik b'yavrei drachim. I thought, I can't daven on the road. There's going to be traffic. They're going to be honking me. People are going to come over and say, hello. I'm going to be interrupted if I'm on the road. So I went in. So I thought this was a quiet little place, like a phone booth. I'll dive in there. Va'amar li, Eliyahu HaNavi told me, Ha'ilcha l'spal tefillah katzara. So you should have abbreviated your tefillah. If you thought that you wouldn't be able to get in a good, full, solid Shemayna Esrei, standing on the side of the road, you could dive in a shorter tefillah. But you don't go into a churva. So... Yeah, the story is not over, but Rabbi Yossi interrupts the story to say, so on this occasion, I learned three things, three halachas from Eliyahu HaNavi. The first thing that I learned is that you're not allowed to go into a churva. And it's a big deal, right? Even to this degree, that even though it'll be better for your davening, you're not allowed to go into a churva. Why? The Gemara at the bottom of the Yama will bring three reasons why you're not allowed to go into a churva. But Rabbi Yossi says, I learned then from Rabbi Yossi, from Eliyahu HaNavi, you're not allowed to go into a churva. But lamaditi, the second thing that I learned was shemispalim b'derech, that you're allowed to daven on the side of the road. That's what Eliyahu HaNavi told me I should have done. I was on the road, and it was time for a tefillah. I should have just stood where I was and daven. V'lamaditi, and the third thing that I learned was shemispalel b'derech, that if someone is davening on the road, mispal tefillah katzara, he should daven a shorter tefillah. So Rabbi Yossi says, I learned these three halachas. You don't go into a churva, you daven on the side of the road, and that when you're pressed for time, there are shortcuts in the tefillah katzara. So what's this tefillah katzara? Take a look at Rashi, Havinenu. Ulkamon mefarish l'perek tefillah sashachar. Rashi says that the Gemara on Daf Chav Tes introduces us to a tefillah called Havinenu. The way the Gemara over there describes it is that you start Baruch Hashem Lakeinu Melkei Avisenu. You say the regular bracha of Avos, the bracha of Ata Gibril Alav Hashem, the bracha of Ata Kadesh, Til Baruch Ata Hashem Hakel Hakadesh, and then instead of saying the following 13 brachos, Ata Chayin Hashivenu Slachanu, you say one bracha that includes a few words that refer to the themes of each of the 13 other brachos. You say that bracha, it ends with Baruch Hashem Shema Yat Tefillah. The whole Nitzach of the bracha is written out on Daf Chav Tes. You can see it over there. And then you continue with the last three brachas, you say Ritzei, and Moedim and Simshalim. So...
sounds like the brachas we make after Kabbalah Shabbos.
That's an even shorter Mayan Shabbat, right? Because it's... This is real... I mean, that's... this is a real seven brachas. That is just one bracha. But, yes, there is a similarity. Now, Tosfos, if you take a look, Tosfos Nimas L'Hayelach L'Espal Tefillah Katzara, we won't do the whole thing in Tzara, but Tosfos, he starts by saying that Rashi identifies this Tefillah Katzara as Havinenu. The Gemara in Daf Lamed says that there's one thing called Tefillah Katzara and a different thing called Havinenu. So, and the Tefillah Katzara over there is a very short Tefillah. It's just one paragraph, and it starts, Amch Yisrael Merubim, Tzarchi Amch Merubim. So Tosfos starts off thinking that when you see the words Tefillah Katzara, you're supposed to remember that Gemara in Daf Lamed and say that it means the short paragraph of Tzarchi Amch Merubim. But then Tosfos says, problem is, the Gemara over there says that short paragraph of Tzarchi Amch Merubim is only allowed by Makam Sakana. Rabbi Yossi was not on Makam Sakana. Rabbi Yossi told, when Eliyahu HaNavi said, why didn't you stand on the road? He didn't say because there were robbers there that were shooting. He said because there were passersby that were going to interrupt me. So it sounds like he was not in any danger. So he shouldn't be allowed to say Tzarchei Amcha Merubim. So Tosfos ends up acknowledging that Rashi's pshat is the best pshat. That over here it really means Havinenu. And even though the Gemara elsewhere says that Tefillah Katzara does not refer to Havinenu, that's in that context over there. It's contrasting Tefillah Katzara to Havinenu. But over here, the expression Tefillah Katzara actually does mean Havinenu.
You have to take it for granted Rabbi Yossi knew about the Tefillah, but he didn't realize that he could say it at the time.
Okay, he realized that this was a good excuse for saying
it. He knew about the Tefillah.
I don't know that for sure. But certainly that could be, that what he was learning here was that being on the road is a legitimate basis for saying the Tefillah of Havinenu. So, yeah, that.
Isn't there in the halacha, you're not supposed to daven outside under the kippah? I think
that would be. Daven outside what?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with that. But it's certainly not any sort of a ma'akev. I mean, if that's where you are and that's where you can.
Is it better off saying daven outside?
Yeah, over here, Eliyahu HaNavi was telling him. No, maybe, I mean, lechatchila you go to shul, but I don't know if indoors and outdoors is an issue. I'm not aware that there's such a halacha, but yeah, I mean, this is not lechatchila circumstances. He was on the road. Ordinarily, he would be in shul with a minyan. So Rashi and Tosfos both learn the ma'aseh that this is Havinenu. This tefillah of Havinenu is brought down in Shulchan Aruch. It says in Shulchan Aruch that this is Siman Kuf Yud, that if somebody is traveling and is on the side of the road, he's afraid that he's going to be interrupted, he says Havinenu. And the Shulchan Aruch says, and for that matter, even if you're not traveling, but if somebody is tarud, he has things on his mind, and he doesn't think that he could daven a whole Shemoneh Esrei with Kavana, so then he should daven Havinenu. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Now, it's a little bit surprising that we don't know more about this tefillah. How come we aren't saying this all the time? This is a tefillah you could say when you're pressed for time. Who isn't pressed for time? This is a tefillah you could say when you're not going to have enough kavana. Who isn't worried about not having enough kavana? So the Bir Halacha, the Mishnah Berurah in the Bir Halacha, he asks, why aren't we more familiar with this Havinenu? Why don't we do this? Apparently, it was, in the times of the Mishnah Berurah, it was pretty much unheard of. I mean, I think even nowadays, you know, and probably in those days also, it was not printed in the Siddurim, in the standard Siddurim. I think there are some Siddurim, some very complete Siddurim. Yeah, I see you're nodding your head, which...
Yeah,
okay, yes, yeah, some Siddurim will have it, but I think most Siddurim don't have it. It's apparently, for many day races, it has not been a staple of Gideon's repertoire of Tfilas. So the Bir Halacha says, he has two explanations for this. First, he says that, you know, I have a kasha. It says here in Siman Kuf Yud that if you're afraid you won't be able to have kavana for the whole Shemoneh Esrei, you should say a shorter tefillah, Havinenu. There's a different sif in Shulchan Aruch, though, a few pages earlier in Siman Kuf Aleph, which is also a Gemara later on in the Masechta, where it says that a person should really have kavana for his whole tefillah, but if he feels that he won't be able to have kavana for his whole tefillah, he should make sure to have kavana at least for the brach of Avos. So over there, it seems that Chazal are being more makel. You can have a hard time having kavana. Okay, so you could have kavana just for one bracha. Over here, it sounds like Chazal were saying that no. You know, and I don't know which one is more makel. Over there, it didn't say so. Just skip to a shorter tefillah. And over here, it doesn't say just, you know, be satisfied with kavana for one bracha. You have these two different instructions.
Yeah, but shorter tefillah in terms of you know, relative to Shemona Esrei.
Yeah, but it's still
shorter than, it's still shorter than, excuse me, it's still longer than Avos.
So this is what Shmuel says, exactly that. That there are different madrigas in how tired one is and, you know, when he feels he's challenged for kavana. When we say that, if you don't think you could have kavana for your whole Shemona Esrei, so say it's shorter tefillah, that's assuming that you could have kavana for these seven brachas. This is not, you know, 2 seconds. This is a seven brachas, the first three, the last three, and a nice long bracha in the middle. So if you feel that you can't have, you're too, and apparently once upon a time, people were really able to measure just how much kavana they were up to. And if you feel that you can't have kavana for the full 18, 19 brachas, but you could have kavana for a solid seven brachas, then you daven havineinu. But if you don't think you could necessarily have kavana even for seven brachas, then daven the whole Shemona Esrei. If it's going to be without kavana anyway, daven the whole Shemona Esrei and have kavana just for the bracha of Avos. So the Mishnah Berurah says that maybe once upon a time people were making these cheshbonos. Today I'm in the mood for, I feel like I could do a seven bracha with kavana. But nowadays, our kavana is so shvach anyway that who's going to take upon themselves, oh yes, 18 not, but seven brachas I'm sure I could do. You're never really sure you can have much kavana. So just daven the whole Shemona Esrei, and if all you have kavana for is the first bracha, so you'll make do with the first bracha. Then he says a second reason. He says maybe as a simpler, more straightforward reason, that maybe Klal Yisrael, even though, you know, nobody ever came along and paskened this formally, but maybe Klal Yisrael collectively just came to the realization that this is going to be abused. That if we say that when you're pressed for time, you do a shorter tefillah, so, you know, who's ever not pressed for time? You know, I mean, remember, back then, it took a long time to go places. They didn't have cars. They took a long time to wash their clothes. They didn't have washing machines. Of course, nowadays we have plenty of free time because we have all this technology that does all these things for us. But back then, they had to do everything themselves. So the Shabbos says they didn't have free time. So if you're allowed to say, you know, if you would skip Shemona Esrei because you're pressed for time, so no one would ever say Shemona Esrei. So Klal Yisrael just decided we're not going to take these shortcuts anymore. That's one shortcut that we haven't dropped yet entirely. That's true. Okay, man, you know that, Mr. Shem, I don't even know if that's a bracha sugya, but we'll probably, it's really more Megillah sugya, but we'll make sure it comes up somewhere in the next 62 blocks.
The way we done with full Shemona Esrei, it doesn't take much longer than this seven bracha.
Right.
What would the rest of the tefillahs, the Lelukas and the Psikah de Zimra, they didn't daven? You just said Shemona Esrei?
So, okay, that's a good question. A short answer, I could tell you maybe this was Mincha. Mincha is basically just Shemona Esrei. The might a fuller answer, so we'll see later in the Masechta what kind of Psukah de Zimra they had. Psukah de Zimra, as we have, it really doesn't appear in the Gemara, but there is a reference to something along the lines of a Psukah de Zimra, but we'll get to that a different day. Okay. There's a different question on this Gemara that we just covered. A little bit of a more machshavadika question that some of the Mepharshim talk about. One of the Mepharshim in the back of the Gemara is the Maritzchias. Maritzchias is Ma'irer that in this Gemara, Rabbi Yossi says that I had this encounter with Eliyahu HaNavi, and he kind of told me off for, you know, he said, you know, you really shouldn't have done that. And Ba'isa Shalom Madati Menu Shleish Advarim. I learned the three halachas. I learned that you don't go into a churva. I learned that you're allowed to daven on the side of the road. And I learned that when one davens on the side of the road, you're supposed to say Havineinu. So the next day, if somebody would have come over to Rabbi Yossi with a shayla, a halacha shayla, what should I do if I'm on the side of the road and it's time for davening? He would have told him, you say Havineinu. And if the Yid would have asked, Rebbe, where does it say that? He would have said, I heard it from Eliyahu HaNavi. That was the source for this halacha. The Mitzchia says, is that really so partial that you're allowed to use Eliyahu HaNavi as a source for a halacha? We know that the Gemara says in various places, Tari Lav HaShemayim, the most famous Gemara is with Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Elazar used all sorts of miracles to prove that the halacha was like him, and Rabbi Yeshua said that Tari Lav HaShemayim, the Tari is not in heaven, we don't use miracles to prove this. The Maritzchias doesn't bring that Gemara. He really zeroes in on something that's a more precise contradiction to this Gemara. It says in Shabbos Daf Chuf Ches, the Gemara says that they asked Rav Nachman Yitzchak Shaila, Are you allowed to write tefillin on the skin of a fish? A kosher fish? Is the skin of a fish considered a good surface for writing tefillin? Sir, Rav Nachum Yitzchak's initial response was, if Eliyahu HaNavi was here, he would tell us. So then the Gemara says, what do you mean if Eliyahu HaNavi was here, he would tell us? And then there's a Shaka Vatari explaining what he means. So Rashi explains that kasha of the Gemara. When the Gemara says, what do you mean if Eliyahu HaNavi was here, he would tell us? Rashi says that the Gemara meant to be asking that Itziv HaHeter is not Taloi and Eliyahu HaNavi because Tarei Lav HaShemayim Hi. And if Eliyahu HaNavi was here, he couldn't paskin for us because Tarei is not in Shemayim. So there you have a Gemara, at least the way Rashi explains the Gemara, you have a pretty straightforward statement in the Gemara that you're not allowed to get a Psak HaLacha from Eliyahu HaNavi.
Where's that Gemara?
That's Shabbos Kuf Ches. Yeah.
What about Teiku that we have? We say Teiku.
Ah, very good. So what about the Teiku? So when the Ratzchiz doesn't bring in Teiku, so you know, put that. We'll come to that in a couple of minutes. But I don't think that he brings that, but I'm going to come to Chassam Sofer shortly, and he does bring it. The Ratzchiz gives a teretz. He says that there's two different personas of Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi is a Navi, you know, who gets communication from Shemayim. He also was a big Talmud Chacham. He was the Talmud of Achi Ashiloini. He doesn't mention this, but I think it's kedai to bring in that when the Rambam in the beginning of his Akdamot Yad HaChazaka is going through the Shalshalas of the Maseira of how the Torah was passed down Midar Ladar, the Rambam mentions who was the main representative in each generation for the transmission of Torah from Har Sinai until the Chasim Vasa Talmud, until Rabbi Narashi. Remember, the Rambam counts 40 days. And one of the steps on that chain is Eliyahu HaNavi. Now, he doesn't mean in his capacity as Navi. He was a Talmud of Achi Ashilaini. He was the Rebbe of Elisha. And he learned Torah. He learned Torah like we learned Torah. He learned Torah and he taught Torah, Torah Shebechsav and Torah Shebal Peh. The Rambam over there is actually primarily talking about Torah Shebal Peh. So Zot Meretzchi is Eliyahu Navi was a big Talmud Chacham. He was also a Navi. So if he comes in and tells you a halacha, you have to ask him, which hat are you wearing now? If he's wearing his Navi hat, then you say, no, Torah Lav HaShemayim Hi. But if he's wearing his Talmud Chacham hat, then he's a fine Paisek. So here, Rabbi Yossi understood that he was teaching him. He was just teaching him Torah. He wasn't saying that it was revealed to me. Me'achari apargoid. He was teaching him halachas. So he was accepting this as the Torah that a Rebbe, that a Talmud gets from a Rebbe. And in that capacity, you're allowed to take halachas from Eliyahu HaNavi. The other Gemara, where Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, somebody asked him a shaila, and he said, I wish Eliyahu HaNavi was here. Why was he picking Eliyahu HaNavi? He wasn't there. Why was he picking Eliyahu HaNavi? What he meant to say was that this question is out of this world. We need some supernatural intervention to answer this question. So to that, the Gemara says, oh, my Eliyahu HaNavi, meaning supernatural intervention? You're not allowed to pass on a shayla with supernatural intervention. But over here, where he just met a big Talmud Chacham, who happened to be also somebody supernatural, but he was acting in his capacity as a big Talmud Chacham, so that's why he was able to take halacha from him. Now, there's a tshuva in the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer and Ratzchi is from the same dar, and they were corresponded with each other. The Chassam Sofer talks about this topic also. He broadens the discussion a little bit more. He does not mention our Gemara, but he does bring in, Moshe, what you just said, that the Teiku stands for Tishbi Yitaris Kushit Vibayis. Now, just as an aside, it's fascinating that the Chassam Sofer brings this in. I know when I was a fifth grader, and we were learning, what did I learn in fifth grade? I'm not sure. Psachim, I read Psachim. For the first, so I don't know where exactly, but the first time that I came to Gemara that says Teiku, so that's how my Rebbe teached it. Teiku means Tishbi Yitarech Kushit Vibayis. Teiku is the word the Gemara uses when there's an unresolved question. And I was taught as a child that it stands for Tishbi Yitarech Kushit Vibayis, which means that when Eliyahu HaNavi, Eliyahu HaTishbi arrives, he's going to answer all the questions for us. It wasn't until I got much older and got a little bit of a sense of Gemara Lashon on my own that I understood that the word teiku is an Aramaic word which means it shall stand. The Gemara asks the Shaila, and the Shaila, when the Gemara means to say that we're not answering the Shaila, the Gemara says teiku, the Shaila shall stand. And this remez, this Rashi Teves of Tishbi Tash Kishish Vibay is just a remez ba'alma. So where does it come from? How far back does it go? So it's a very old remez because they were saying it already when I was in fifth grade. But in this Tshuvas Chacham Sofer, I see that it goes even a little bit further back than that. It goes, it's the Tshuvas Chacham Sofer. In looking around to see people bringing down where this comes from, the earliest makor that I saw referenced about it is a chidah, which is also, that's just one dur earlier than the Chacham Sofer, the late 1700s. The Chidah says this remez that Teku stands for Tishbi Taras Kishas V'Yibayis. So it's interesting that this was already, it seems that it was already popular and well known in the times of the Chacham Sofer, but it's not Halacha Moshe M'Sinai, this Rosh Hashanah. It's a vertel that was said, actually, in the Chidah, again, this may be the first time that it appears in print in the Chidah, but he says that he heard it said over from B'Shem the Gurei Ha'ari. Now, Guri Ha'ari is a cute expression that they use to refer to the Mekubalim and Tzvas. The leader, Guri Ha'ari, literally means the lion cubs. The cubs of the lion are the Guri Ha'ari. Now, the leader of the Mekubalim was called the Ari. He was, right? Ari stands for Rav Yitzchak, or whatever the Aleph exactly stands for, but it's a, right? The Arizal was the leader of the Mekubalim and Tzvas. So the rest of the Mekubalim and Tzvas, this is sort of a play on words, were called the Guri Ha'ari. The Chidah says that he heard this verse said over B'Shem the Guri Ha'ari. That's where the idea comes from. The Chacham Sofer refers to it that Tishbi Taras Kishas V'Yibayis, that we expect that when the Gemara leaves a question unresolved, Eliyahu Navi is going to come and he's going to answer it for us. So we have the same question, right, that how could he do that? Tere Lava Shemayim Him. But he takes the discussion a little bit in a broader direction also. He says, you know, we have a minhag by every bris milah. We set up a chair for Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi comes to every bris milah. It's in the nusach that the moyel says, I don't know it so well, but I'm moyed al yamini l'samcheni v'sam, he says, Eliyahu malach ha-bris. You don't have to bother. Something like, Eliyahu malach ha-bris, Amoyd al Yamini v'samcheni, right? The Moyel appeals to Eliyahu HaNavi to help him, to support him in the performance of the Bris Milah. Meaning there's this belief that Eliyahu HaNavi comes to every Bris Milah. So look at some Sefer, that means even on Shabbos, right? Because the minig is that he says the same nusach even on Shabbos. But on the other hand, we have, it's cute the way he doesn't go straight to the Gemara, he brings a reference from popular experience. Thank you. Eliyahu Malach Abris, Hinei Shalchol Afanecha, Amod Al Yimini V'samchein, Yishkoyach. Yeah, there's the Nusach. And then he brings another reference to popular experience. He says, you know, on Matzah Shabbos, we sing Zmiris, having to do with Eliyahu Anav. If you look at the Matzah Shabbos Zmiris, so they deal with Eliyahu HaNavi, right? There's the Zmira that goes Eliyahu HaNavi, Eliyahu HaTishbi, Eliyahu HaGiladi, that's from the Masa Shabbos Zmiris, and there's other Zmiris that refer to Eliyahu HaNavi. Why is there this inyan of singing songs about Eliyahu HaNavi on Mitzvah Shabbos? So he says, based on the Gemara in Erevin Daf Mem Gimel, it's because the Gemara over there says that Eliyahu HaNavi, we look forward to him coming every day, but he can't come on Shabbos. Because for Eliyahu HaNavi to come would be going outside of the Tchum. And Eliyahu HaNavi can't go outside of the Tchum. He keeps the mitzvahs of the Torah, so he can't travel outside of the Tchum. So therefore, on Shabbos, we don't expect Eliyahu. So on, you know, every day of the week, we're hoping to see Eliyahu HaNavi, but not on Shabbos. So when Shabbos is over, so we get back into our mode of looking forward to seeing Eliyahu HaNavi. That's what we're singing about Eliyahu HaNavi on Matzah Shabbos. So he says, so these two minhagim are austere to each other. I sing the Zmiras of Eliyahu HaNavi on Matzah Shabbos because that he's not coming on Shabbos because he's not going to travel outside of the Tchum. But that morning, Shabbos morning in Shul, I made a bris and I said, Eliyahu Malach HaBris, Amoyed Al Yamin L'Samcheni. So I thought that he was there. He's not coming on Shabbos. And for that matter, if there was one bris here in New York and there was another bris in Eretz Yisrael, which is outside of the Tchum from one to the other, and they both said, Eliyahu Malach HaBris, Amoyed Al Yamin L'Samcheni. So is he traveling? Is he not traveling? So the Chacham Sofer, he also says two dinim in Eliyahu HaNavi, but he has a different way of dividing it up than the Meretz Chiyas did. He says that when, you know, Eliyahu HaNavi has a very unique history. He was walking along with Elisha, and then Elisha saw a chariot of fire come, and then Eliyahu HaNavi disappeared. So what happened to him? Where did he go? So the Chassam Sofer says it's not quite that his guf went up to the Olam HaNeshamos. Guf can't go to the Olam HaNeshamos, but it means that his guf never died. It didn't go into the ground. So it's in Gan Eden Shalmata, whatever that means exactly, but some place where, which is sort of, I guess, a supernatural place, but it's a place where our bodies could reside. And his neshama went up to Shemayim. But unlike most people, their neshama goes up to Shemayim after they died, so there's no more guf. But Eliyahu Navi is able, he has a guf like in a box that's accessible to him. So he's able to appear with a guf and without a guf. So when he appears without a guf, just as a neshama, so then that's like a malach. That's a spirit, an angel. That's a ruchniyistic thing. And then we don't expect him to keep the mitzvahs, so he's not bound by the Isser Tchumen. So when he comes to a bris, he's not coming with his guf, right? No one ever saw Eliyahu Navi at a bris. Eliyahu Navi, you know, we set up a chair, but the chair usually stays empty. So, right, we don't expect him to come with his guf. That's just a malach of an Eliyahu Navi. So that's one type of revelation of Eliyahu Navi. Then there's Eliyahu Navi, sometimes he collects his guf, and then he comes to earth with a guf. When he comes with a guf, then he's expected to keep the halachas. When the Gemara says that he's not coming on Shabbos because he's bound by the Yisr Tchumen, that means we're talking when he's coming to be Mavasar, the Geula, right? To be the Mavasar, the Mashiach is coming, then he's coming with a guf. Then he's coming as the man, Eliyahu Navi. So then he can't come with Chutz Tchum. So when he's coming with a guf, he can't come with Chutz Tchum. When he's coming without a guf, as he does by a person, he could come with Chutz Tchum. Zotach Sam Sefer, that same divide also explains why sometimes we could receive halachas from him, sometimes we can't receive halachas from him. When he comes without a guf, so that means he's a malach, then he's a something shemayim dick. So then teri lava shemayim, we can't be makabal any teri from him. But when he comes with a guf, then you're allowed to ask him questions. And in this respect, he's like the Chassam Sofer is really saying, sort of like the Meretz Chias. Then he's really just answering as a rav, as a paisek. So then, if he's coming with a guf, then you're allowed to ask him questions. That's why as a lavai, when he comes to Mivasa the Guli, he's going to come with a guf. So Tishbi Tyrus Kushes Vibais, he can answer all of the questions also. Okay, so we have these two approaches. Again, they're, I guess, a little bit similar to each other, but they're both saying that there's two manifestations of Eliyahu Navi. The way the Meretz Chias put it is that he could be talking as a Navi or he could be talking as a rabbi. The way the Chassam Sofer puts it, he really makes a more fundamental divide. There's the Eliyahu Navi coming as a malach and the Eliyahu Navi coming as a human being.
They'll say at night, is the Eliyahu coming? Is that based on anything real, or is that, you know, when Shvuach Halasa?
Yeah, I'm not aware of any Makar. In my house, there's a huge fight every year.
It's so pervasive. I mean,
in my house, there's a very big fight every year. There are some of the kids say, Abba says he's not coming. The other half of the family says, Abba's a kaifer. I'm not sure where. I mean, you know, the kosher Eliyahu is called kosher Eliyahu because that's really like a teku kosher, right? Because there's a discussion with the Gemara about four kosher, five kosher. So that's why I think in Preiskim there is a reference to Benisa Nesidim Lehi Goel. So there's the hope that Mashiach will come and Eliyahu Navi will come and be Mavasar on the Geula, but not that. But this idea that separate from being Mavasar on the Geula, even Mashiach isn't coming, but Eliyahu Navi is coming to visit everybody's Pesach Seder. I don't know of any makar for that. I mean, any like real makar, let's say in Shasu Poiskim, but it appears in, I don't know, in Svarim and popular folklore. Okay. Let's go back into the Gemara. I'll continue the Gemara. We're still in this Braisa where Rabbi Yossi is talking about his meeting with Eliyahu Navi. So we're on the third wide line. The Amarli, after Rabbi Yossi tells us what he learned from Eliyahu Navi on that occasion, then he continues and he says that Eliyahu Navi said to me, Bini. Again, you could tell this was a very a very special, warm experience for Rabbi Yossi. You know, that Eliyahu Navi was treating him with such love. He called him Shamalacha Rebbe, and then he said Bini, and now he says the second time Bini. Makoil Shamata Bechor Vazai. What noise did you hear when you were inside the Churva, this ruins? Vamarti Lai, so apparently it was a given that he was going to hear some kind of a koil, and Eliyahu Navi was asking him, what did you hear? So Rabbi Yossi says, I told him back, Shamati Baskol Shamanahemes Kayaina. I heard a voice that was making a noise like a dove, Vaimeres, and saying, Oi Labanim Shabavaini Semech Raftias Basi Visaraftias Hechali Viglazim Labainu Umais. Now this is a repeat of the last line that we learned last week, the Gemara right before the two dots, where it says that three times every night the Kadosh Baruch Hu says exactly these words. We mentioned last week that these words might not be the right words because the Oy Labanim was maybe put in by the Christians. The original Nusach, the way it appears in the Rishonim, is Oi Shechravtias Basi Visaraftias Hechali Viglazim Labainu Umais. The Goyim didn't like this connotation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to have regret for something that he did. But Al Kapanim, that Lashon that we said before that he was saying three times a day, three times each night, so over here Rabbi Yossi says, that's exactly what I heard inside this Churva. Va'amar li, and Eliyahu Navi told me, Chayecha v'chayei reishcha, that's the Lashon of a Shvua, I assure you in the strongest possible terms, that it's not only now, at this moment, that you that the voice is saying this. It's really saying it three times a day, which may be a reference to the Gemara above, where the three mishmaris of the night, although I think some argue that over here it says yoim, so maybe it's an additional three times. But some of the pashup shot is that it means chol yom v'yom over here just means, you know, three times each night. And then Eliyahu Navi adds something fascinating. And not only this, meaning you're hearing this expression, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu lamenting the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, it's not only when you're in the Churva and when the people are saying the Tikkun at the Shalosh Mishmaris, but you know when else HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels like this? B'shosh Yisrael nechnasun labate knesiyais ulabate midrashais. Every time that Yidden gather in a shul, va'oinin yehei shmoi hagadol mevayrach, may Hashem's great name be blessed, which is Hebrew translation of yehei shmei rabba mevarach. So every time that we say that yehei shmei rabba, HaKadosh Baruch Hu minanea roish, HaKadosh Baruch Hu nods his head, va'oimer, and he says, Ashrei ha-melech shemakalsin oisei beveisei kach. Fortunate is the king who gets praised like this in his house. Maloy la'av shehegles banav. What's going to be with the father that exiled his children? Va'olam lebanim shagolam al shulchan avim. And woe to the children that were exiled from their father's table. So this is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacts every time that he hears Yehi Shmei Rabba. There's an interesting short ha'ara in the Taisus Harash says over there. You know, there's one word in the Kaddish that doesn't really seem to fit. The whole thing is about praising Hashem. So we say, I'm starting in the second half of the paragraph now, Yisbarach, Yishtabach, Yisparv, Yisramim, Yisnaseh, right? All the shyness of Hashem's name be blessed and elevated and sanctified. Yisnaseh, Yishadav, Yisalav, Yishal, Shmei Dekutcha Berichu, right? His name, then Hashem's name should be elevated and sanctified. Le'ela, even greater than Mikol Berchasa V'shirasa, all blessings and songs, Tushbachas and praises, the nechamasa. Now that word doesn't really seem to fit. Nechamasa is consolation, like Hamakim Menachem Aschem Sheikh Sharavel Tzim Yishalayim. What's that doing in the Kaddish? We're saying Hashem's name should be praised and blessed and sanctified above all other praises and songs and consolations. What does consolation have to do with the Kaddish? So like Taisa Rosh, this Gemara, you know what happens every time we say Yehi Shmei Rabba? It evokes a very kaviyachal, a very strong emotional reaction, because Rebbe starts to cry. And he's saying, oi, and he's lamenting the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. And that Klal Yisrael are in Golos. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was thinking about how sad it is that Klal Yisrael is in Golos. So we need to kaviyachol to be menachem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this, and so we're saying that that this should offer kaviyachol some kind of menachama to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the nechamasa that's in the kaddish. It's because of the emotional kaviyachol reaction that is elicited by the Yehishmei Rabbah. Now it's interesting that Rashi over here says on the word Ashrei Melech Shemakalsa Noisim Beveisei Kach Ashrei Kozman Shahoya Kilus Zeb Seir Beis Hamikdash. This Rashi took me by surprise. I thought that right, when I read the Gemara, because Baruch Hu nods his head, which I thought was a positive gesture, and then Ashrei Melech Shemakalsa Noisim Beveisei Kach. Although I had read that to be a positive line, because Baruch was saying, wow, how fortunate I am, how wonderful it is that Klal Yisrael is saying this to me. And then he switches into the negative of how sad it is that they're in Galus. But Rashi says, no, that first line, the Ashrei line, is also a sad line. He doesn't mean Ashrei usually means fortunate, but he doesn't mean I'm fortunate now. When we say Yehishmei Rabbi, he says, wasn't it nice when they used to say this in the Beis HaMikdash? So this Lashon of Ashrei HaMelech is also a Lashon of being Mis'oinein and Mis'abel Kaviyachal on the Korban of the Beis HaMikdash. That he's remembering how nice it was when they said it in the Beis HaMikdash. But I was surprised that Rashi explains the Gemara that way, because I thought that the simpler shot would have been to say that he's saying, no, it's good, it's nice, it's so wonderful that they're saying this. And Menanei Reishei, it also sounds like that. So the Chassam Sefer in his Drushes says, this is brought down in the back of the Izvahad Gemaras, they bring down that, I mean, in the Masifta Gemaras, they bring down this Drushes Chassam Sefer, that the Chassam Sefer says that, again, he's not going to argue with Rashi, but he's explaining Agarot. He said the way he would explain it is that Ashrei HaMelech means that, what Akash Baruch means to say is like this, that the Golos is Geferlach. But if Klal Yisrael, despite the Golos, could come into Bati Knesset and Bati Midrashos and say Yehishmei Rabbah, that's so extraordinary to me, that's even better, I'm more, again I'll use this word with apologies, I'm more touched by that than I am by the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. The Brin Kabbonis in the Beis HaMikdash, very nice, but you know, they're in Eretz Yisrael, Zman Shashan Kisiknam Yisrael Shulun Al Nabas, and it's easy to serve me under those circumstances. But if I send them into Golos or Rahman Al Islam, they're subject to all sorts of persecution and oppression, and they still come to Shul, and they still say Yehishmei Rabbah, that's even better for me. So the way he says, the way to read it is, Ashrei HaMelech Shemakalsan Es Bezikach, means right now, in the present, this is gevaldik. Shmarach says, this is gevaldik, that I have Yidden praising me like this. Mali, but the Chassam Sefer goes even further than I had dreamt of going. He says, the Lashon Malei La'av is also not an expression of lamenting, but he says, Malei La'av, like, what does the Av care? Like, there's no cost to the Av, Shehigles Banov, meaning I, as the father, I exiled my children, but it didn't cost me anything, because the Nachas Ruach that I get when they say Yehishmei Rabbah, for me, Kaviyachal is more geschmack than the Nachas Ruach that I got from the Reich Nechayich and the Beis HaMikdash. You know what the problem is? There's only one problem with the Golos. For them, it's sad. That's what Kesher Baruch says. For me, I'm very comfortable. It's just Klal Yisrael that's suffering. Why is he Kaviyachal so comfortable? Because the Nachas Ruach that he gets from our Avoda, despite the Golos, is a bigger Nachas Ruach. That's how he teaches the Ashrei HaMelech. And again, I mean, without this whole binyan, but I had thought that was more the Pasha reading in the Gemara, that Ashrei HaMelech, and then Anei HaReisha, Yivayim Ashrei HaMelech. But Rashi says that the whole thing is the Lashon of being Mis'oinein on the Chorban, and Ashrei HaMelech means that it was nice back in the olden days when they used to say this in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, there's a very famous Taisis here, the bottom Taisis on the Amud. We have these words, Yehi Shmoi HaGadol Mevayrach, which we should recognize, even though it's not exactly what we say, but it's Berach what we say. We say in Kaddish, Yehi Shmei Rabba Mevayrach. And that's Aramaic, and this is Hebrew. Shmei means Shmoi, right? Shmoi in Hebrew is Shmei in Aramaic. HaGadol is Rabba. So this Bryce said, there's a few places in Shas where it uses the Lashon Yehi Shmei Rabba Mevayrach. And over here, this Brisa was using it in Aramaic. Maybe, again, it's Rabbi Yossi talking. Rabbi Yossi lived in Eretz Yisrael. Maybe in Eretz Yisrael at some time. They said the Kaddish in Lashon Kodesh. That's how Rabbi Yossi says it over. But it's referring to the tefillah that we say called Kaddish, and we say Heishmei Abba Mevarach. Zok Taisvis, this Gemara is very instructive in telling us how to read those words. Because there's something that in the Aramaic, the diktuk in the Aramaic isn't really clear enough to tell us which way to read it. But from this Gemara that presents it in Hebrew, we get sort of fresh eyes on this line, and now we know the right meaning. And he, what are the two ways? So he brings down from the Machzor of Vitri. The Machzor of Vitri was a sefer of Hilchas Tefillah. It's a siddur and a Hilchas Tefillah sefer that was written by one of the Talmidim of Rashi. And he says that the Taish of Yehei Shmei Rabbah, Shmei is spelled Shin Mem, followed by a Yud, followed by a Hei. So he says, look at it as a compound word. It's not Shmei, but Shem Yud Kei. The Yud and the Hey is that's the Shem Yud Kei. And Yehei Shem Yud Kei Rabbah. Rabbah means great, meaning it should be completed. What does it mean it should be completed? So it's a reference to the Rashi, well-known Rashi, the end of Parshas Peshalach. The pasuk says, Ki Yod Al Kes Ka, Mocham Al Hashem Amal, Midyar L'dar. And over there, Rashi brings down from Chazal that the name of Hashem, there's a name for four letters, Yud Kei Vav Kei, and there's a name of two letters, which also is a Shem Hashem, Yud Kei. And that represents the broken form of Hashem's name. And as long as Amalek exists, as long as the Koiches Hara in the world are unchecked, so Hashem's name is not complete. But and Amalek is going to be destroyed. So then, means that Hashem's name will be expanded into the four-letter name, then it'll be Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. So right now, we have the Shem Yud-Kei, and the name is not complete. So Yehei Shmei Rabbah, may the name, may the Shem Yud-Kei become bigger, meaning become complete, go from two letters to four letters. That's the pshat that the Machzor of Vitri says. It's a very beautiful pshat in this line, but it means where we put the commas. That means that Yehei Shmei Rabbah, that's a sentence. Yehei Shmei Rabbah, period. May the name Yud Kei become bigger. That's the end of the sentence. The word Rabbah is not an adjective on the Shmei. It's not may his great name become something. No, it's may his name become great, period. But over here, we have in this Gemara, it's written in Lashon Kodesh. And in Lashon Kodesh, if it meant the way the Machzor of Vitri understood, may his name become great, it would have said, Yehei Shem Yud Kei Gadol. But if you look at the way it's written in the Gemara, Yehei Shmoi or Shem Yud Kei Hagadol. Hagadol with a hey means that it's an adjective coming to modify the Shmei. So Yehei Shmei Hagadol, and the word Rabbah in Aramaic is being used instead of Hagadol. So Yehei Shmei Rabbah means may his great name, and then evidently we still in the middle of the sentence. Yehei may his great name what? So you need to add the word Mevarach or Mevarach to complete the sentence. Yehei Shmei Rabbah Mevarach, may his great name be blessed. So it's a whole different reading. According to the Machzor of Vitri, it was Yehei Shmei Rabbah, may the Shem Yud Kei become great. Mevarach la'olam olmayamai is an additional sentence which starts with the word Mevarach and it should be blessed forever and ever. But from the fact that the Gemara has a hey in the Hebrew version, that means that it's Yehei Shmei Rabbah Mevarach, period. May his great name be blessed, or comma, la'olam olmayamai forever. But not that Mevarach la'olam olmayamai is a new sentence. So this Machzor of Vitri was a beautiful pshat, and if in your whole life you only see the Kaddish in Aramaic, you could think it's a good pshat. But since in this braisa that the Gemara brings in Lashon Kodesh, the hey of Hagadol shows you that it's the wrong pshat. And really the way you read it is, may his great name be blessed forever. Zok the Rav Mah in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Nun Vav, that when you're the Chazan and you're saying Kaddish and you're putting in commas or pauses, so you be careful. You don't say Yehei Shmei Rabbah Mevarach La'olam Olmayamaya. You say Yehei Shmei Rabbah Mevarach La'olam Olmayamaya. You could put a pause, you could put a comma after the word Mevarach, but don't put a comma before the word Mevarach. If you put it before the word Mevarach, then you'd be reading it like the Machzor of Vitri. But from the Gemara, there's a riot against the Machzor of Vitri. So we end up with Tosis's pshat, so you have to put your comma. If you're going to put a comma, put it after the word Mevarach. Then Tosis, the second half of the Tosis, so that's a new discussion. he says, how can we say Kaddish in Aramaic? You notice in this braisa, of course, it wasn't said in Aramaic, it was said in Lashon Kodesh, which, like I said, may indicate that once upon a time, in, at least in some places, it was said in Lashon Kodesh. But nowadays, throughout the world, it's said in Aramaic. Why is it said in Aramaic? So Tosfos says that, it's actually a very cute Tosfos. It says, V'gam ma sha'imrim ha'olam. Tosfos quotes a pshat b'shem la'olam. The olam says, we think of that as being a very contemporary term. Tosfos writes this, that the olam says a pshat, that the reason why we say Kaddish in Aramaic is because it's such a chush of a tefillah, such a beloved tefillah, that we don't want the malachim to get jealous of this tefillah. It's based on a Gemara in Shabbos where it says that the malachim don't understand Aramaic. They understand Lashon Kodesh, but they don't understand Aramaic. So if we have a tefillah, we don't want the malachim to understand, so we say it in Aramaic. And this tefillah is so chush of, such a beautiful tefillah, we don't want them, if the malachim hear it, they're going to get jealous. Tosfos says, Tosfos doesn't like this pshat. Tosfos says, Harry, comment tefillah yafos. He says, in my city we have lots of beautiful tefillahs. And this is the most beautiful tefillah. It's a very beautiful tefillah. Yeah, but so is Shema Nesri, so is Kedusha, so is Baruch Hu. Lots of other tefillahs that are very beautiful, and we don't avoid saying all of those. Right? So the Olam Pshat doesn't like because Tais is in love with so many things in the Siddur that he can't believe that this is the one tefillah that's considered a tefillah yafa. So why is it said in Aramaic? So Tosfos says something that to us would seem a little bit surprising. Tosfos says, so that people will understand. Once upon a time, that was the vernacular. And Tosfos says, look at the Gemara in Saita. To fall into the Tosfos quotes the Gemara in Saita. Ein ha'olam miskayim ela asidra de kedushta va'ayeheshmei rabba de basar agarata. That Gemara is a makar that you say yeheshmei rabba after agarata, after saying divrei agada. And Tosfos says that means that when there was a drasha and the amei aretz were there, so they would complete the drasha with a kaddish. So right, that's what we call kaddish drabanan. And so they were, since the Amei Aretz were coming, so they wanted them to be able to understand. So they said it in Aramaic. So of course it's a little bit ironic because, you know, I mean, it got set up like that. So now it stayed like that. We still say it in Aramaic. Ironically, for us, it's harder to understand than the other parts of the Siddur because most people nowadays are less familiar with Aramaic than we are with Lashon Kodesh. But okay, that's the way it got set up. But the reason why it was originally set up that way is so that the Amei Aretz should understand. It's just interesting looking at that Gemara that Tosfos quoted, that Gemara in Sotah Mem Tes that Tosfos brings down. That's the makar for the, you know, we have a lot of different kinds of Kaddishes. There's Kaddish Kaddish, Kaddish Shalim, Kaddish Yosem, Kaddish Durabonon. This Gemara in Sotah is the makar for the Kaddish Durabonon. Kaddish Durabonon means that after you finish learning Torah, after the Tzibur of 10 people that learn Torah, they say a Kaddish. That's the Kaddish that has Al Yisrael, Al Rabban, Al Tamidehoin. And the way that it's described in that Gemara is the Yeheshmei Rabba de Basar Agadata. So it refers specifically to Agadata. The Magen Avraham says that the Kaddish Rabbanan is not said after all Divrei Torah. It's said specifically after Agadata. But if you learn Halacha, right, there's two kinds of Gemaras. There's Hilchasa and there's Agadata. Daf Beis, right, that we learned a couple weeks ago was all Hilchasa. Was talking about Zman Kriyashma. Zok the Magen Avraham, you don't say Kaddish Rabbanan for Daf Beis. Daf Gimel, Zeliyahu HaNavi, and Kaddish Baruch crying for the Churban, that's Agadata. On a Gemara like this, for that you say Kaddish Rabbanan. That's what the Magen Avraham says. And the Magen Avraham says that because of this, there's a beautiful minhag in Klal Yisrael, that when Yidden come together and they say a Shir, so not every Shir is on Agadata, right? Sometimes you're learning Daf Beis, and this is Man Kriya Shema. So at the end of the shir, you say a Mishnah from Pirkei Avos. Why do we say that at the end of every shir? So that you could say the Kaddish Rabbanan. Because the Kaddish Rabbanan is only after Agadata. That Mishnah is Agadata. So you add that to the end of the shir to justify the Kaddish Rabbanan.
Do you really need it though?
So the Magen Avraham says you need it. The Magen Avraham says otherwise you can't say Kaddish Rabbanan, and the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Min Daled brings us down the halacha. The strange thing is that the Mishnah Berurah is not entirely consistent here, because he discusses it again in Siman Kuf Nun Hey, if I'm not mistaken. Hold on, let me just check that. I think it's Siman Kuf Nun Hey. And over there, is that where it is? Yeah, Kuf Nun Hey. Over there in the Bir Halacha, he says that you could say it after all Torah Shabbat Peh. Now, he doesn't bring a Makar. I would point to that I saw in the Rambam that when the Rambam refers to this Kadosh Darbonon, he says that you say this after learning Torah va'afilu divrei agada. It's interesting, the way the Rambam understood that Gemara in Saita, where it says the basar agadata, it meant afilu. The chiddush is even agadata, which is maybe on a lower level. You might think it was being on a lower level than a hilchas like Gemara. Even for that, you could say a kaddish. So according to the Rambam, that it's afilu divrei agada, so and kol shekin divrei halacha, so you could say it's fine at the end of every shir. The Bir Halacha doesn't quote the Rambam, but the Bir Halacha just says that. The Bir Halacha paskins that you could say it at the end of every shir, whether it's halacha or agada. In Siman Nun Daled, he quoted the Magen Avraham without comment. He accepted the psak of the Magen Avraham that you only say it after agadata. But in Siman Kuf Nun Hey, he says that you could say it either way. So halacha l'maisa, I think there's what to be samachan to say it even after Shir and Halakh, even without saying that Mishnah V'chanan Minak HaShayimer. But I would say it's a Minak Toiv to say it, you know, because in deference to the Smug Enough Ram, and at least in one place, the Mishnah Berurah Paskin that way. And what do you make of this? The Mishnah Berurah in one place Paskin's that way, and in another place he says it's just the opposite. So there's, you know, a little secret that not everybody knows about the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah is written, the author's name in the front is the Chafetz Chaim, Rav Saul Meir HaKayin. He wrote the Mishnah Berurah. He's the author, that's whose name is in the front. He didn't really author the whole thing. He, you know, the Chafetz Chaim was way above the idea of, you know, wanting it to be his sefer and his, you know, his legacy, and people should be learning his Torah. He saw it tzeirech for that, you know, Klai Yisrael needed something, and so he arranged that it should get done. So he actually had a committee of people that were working under him, and he was the editor-in-chief, and he did some parts by himself, and his son writes about this, and his son was on the committee, and his son-in-law was on the committee, and then some other Talmid Chachamim and Radin were on the committee. He gave them instructions about what it's supposed to look like and how we're supposed to do it, and different people were writing different parts. And that explains why sometimes there isn't really complete uniformity in the, even though, you know, he edited everything, you know, he got to, he would, you know, decide what went in and what didn't. So if you would have a stira about a really major halacha de kashayla, so that would be more troubling. But over here, it's not a major halacha de kashayla. You know, it's a question of minug about, you know, whether you should say v'chanani minakash at the end of the year, you shouldn't say v'chanani minakash at the end of this year. So one of the people on his staff, on Siman and Dalid, brought down the Magen Avraham, and somebody else, maybe in Kusin, hey, he was writing by himself. Bir Halacha, maybe he's more likely he was writing by himself. I don't know. But, you know, over there it's analogous. Like he didn't feel it was necessary to change it. Fine. So over here it brings down this shita, and over there it brings down different shita. He didn't think it was necessary to change it. But, you know, because Lamai said it's not always his own shita that's being said over. Okay, so that's.
At the end of Rabbi Shmuel, what did he write saying is Agadata?
Oh, that's a very good question. But Rabbi Shmuel, I was going to say, you know, the Magen Avraham mentions how by Enkel Ikenu, we say two Kaddish Rabbanans, I think, over the whole day. That's the only times that we do. So one of them is after Enkel Ikenu. Again, that's people that daven Nesach Svarad saying Enkel Ikenu every morning. I said people that daven Nesach Ashkenaz only say it on Shabbos. But after Enkel Ikenu is the Kaddish Rabbanan. And now Enkel Ikenu is halachad. I mean, Enkel Ikenu is just a piyut, but then after that is the Pitvach Torah. Yeah. Pitvach Torah is halachadik. Zok the Magen Avraham. We end with Talmid Chacham Amarim Shalom Ba'ilam, because that's a Dvar Agada, and that's there to justify the Kaddish Rabbanon. But I was left wondering, but what about Rabbi Shmuel Aimer? Because the first time that we do say it is after Rabbi Shmuel Aimer. Rabbi Shmuel Aimer is not Agadata. That's the beginning of Teres Kainim, is explaining, you know, how we darsh and psukim. That's not Agadata. So you're suggesting that he writes in afterwards? I don't think so. The Yeratzin is not Divrei Agadah. That's a Tzuda. I wouldn't think so. I don't know
if...
What?
Isn't it a full Mishnah?
What?
Rabbi Shmuel Aimer.
It's. I don't think it's a Mishnah. It's. It comes from the Teres Kehanim. I guess you call it a Braisa. But it's. I think I would call it Hilchasa more than Agadata. So according to the Magen Avraham, why do we say Kaddish Rabbanan over there? I don't know. It's a good taina. All right. I want to do the next Gemara. Let's go back to Tanur Rabbanan. Mipnei Shleish Dvarim Inichnasim LaChorba. Right. Rabbi Yosi learned from Eliyahu Navi that you're not allowed to go into a Chorba.
That's a Mishnah, though, isn't it?
What?
He wrote some.
No. She bought a mitzvah from Rabbi Amina.
I don't know.
What's about kasha?
don't know.
Is it built down at the end of August? Perkov?
Maybe. That itself is not a Mishnah.
That's what I mean.
Okay.
So maybe
I don't know.
Maybe I can.
Tanu Rabbanan. Oh, you mean if it's a brace from a voice, then that makes it an agarata. All right. But I don't remember it. Why aren't you allowed to go into a chorvah? You're not be told to what Rabbi Yossi, you don't go into a chorvah, so why not? So Rabbi Yossi, so the Rashi says there's three reasons. Mipnei achshad, zok Rashi, shemayim uzeinu mechanas leisham. Guy goes into a chorvah. Chorvah is a place where nobody goes. It's a broken down building. So if you want to do something very secret because you don't want anyone to see you, so that would be a good place to go. So if we see a talmid chacham going into a chorvah, one might think that there's a Zayna there, and that's why he's trying to go somewhere secret. So you're not allowed to go into a chorvah, so that no one should say that. Rabbi Yehuda mentions that this is the theme of the Yisim Nikim Hashem Yisrael, that he have a chrayis, not just not to do Averis, but not to do anything that looks like you're doing an Avera. Especially a person who's on a Madrega that people look up to him and respect him, has a chrayis to not put himself into a situation where it'll make people talk about him. So you don't go into a chorvah b'nei achashad. And b'nei amapayles, because of a fear that it might fall down, so it's dangerous to go in there, b'nei amazikin, and because of shadim. So chorvah, so shadim could be a haunted chorvah. Okay, so then the Gemara is going to go through all three and explain why each one was necessary. B'nei achashad, you're bringing achashad, tepulem yishum apayles. Isn't it anyway Yasser because of the Mapayos? The says Bechadati. Sometimes there's a new one that where the structure is still pretty stable, so we're not worried about Mapayos, but then we still ask for it because of Chashad. But typically, Mishum Azikin, but wait, but if it's abandoned and it's fallen into ruin, so it'll still be haunted by the Shadim. So why do you have to come on to the reason of Chashad? The Gemara answers betray. The shadim only bother a person when he goes in alone. If there's two people together, then the shadim will stay away. So that's why you need the reason of chashad. Frankly, Gemara, you betray chashad nami laka. If it's two people together, then there wouldn't be a chashad. If two people walking together, so what? You worry that they're going to meet a zayinus? So the Gemara answers, yeah, betray you pritzi. If you have two people, but they're both pritzim, then you could be worried about chashad. So enachanami, if he's a erel chayid, then and he's going by himself, you wouldn't worry about chashad. And if there's two Erlich Yidin, you don't have to worry about Mazikin or about Chashad. But if there's two people, but they're Prutzim, then you don't have to worry about the Mazikin, because the Shadim don't discriminate between the Prutzim and the Kshayim. If there's two people, they'll stay away. But the Chashad, you would still have to worry about. Now the Gemara asks, well, why do you ever need the reason of Mapayla? Typically, Mishum Chashad or Mazikin. You have the other two reasons, and the Gemara says, betray Ukshevi. If there's two people and they're Ksheirim, so two people, that'll keep the Shadim away, and they're Kasher, so there's no concern that there might be a Zayna. So that's why we bring in the reason of Mapayla. And then, what do we need the reason of Mepnei Mazikin for? Typically, Mepnei Chashad and Mapayles. You always have those other two reasons. So the Gemara answers, Bechorva Chadati. If it's a new Chorva, so there's no concern of Mapayles, no of falling down. Uvitshrei, and there's two people, Ukshevi and their Kosher, so there's no concern of Chashad. Frakti Gemara, wait, but if there's two people, so then we're trying to find a case where we're only worried about Shadim and nothing else. But once there's two people, even Shem and Zikin Amilaka, then we don't have to worry about the Shadim either. So the Gemara answers, B'mkoymon cheshinan. If it's a place that's particularly haunted, some places are more haunted by the Shadim than others. So we said before that Shadim stay away when two people go together. But right, it calls to mind the Gemara in Kedushim where it says that in Abaye's Yeshiva there was a Beis Medrash that was so haunted that people wouldn't go even two together. So you see that there's this idea of especially haunted places. Vibayseima or another terrace for why you would sometimes need just the reason of Azikin. La'ilam b'chad uv'chorva chadati. I can tell you that the case is that there's one person. And it's a new chorva that takes care of the mapoilus problem. What's the kasha? Why do you need to worry about mazikin? Why don't you say that there's a concern of chashad? So the answer is the koy bedavra. Let's say it's out in the country. Then there's no chashad. Because a woman is not going to be walking around in the country alone. In the city, she doesn't feel so vulnerable. But in the country, it would be dangerous for a woman to be walking around. So he's not going to meet a Zayna in the Chorva in the countryside. But you still have the reason of Azikin. So the Gemara ends off. We have these three reasons. And each one has a scenario where it's not Negea. The Mishum Chashad of Zayna, you don't have to worry about that if it's in the country. The mazikin, you don't have to worry about that usually if there's two people together. Mapoilis, you don't have to worry about that if it's a new structure. So each one has situations where you are chayshid, situations where you're not chayshid. That's why the Gemara comes on to all three of them together. And so we'll just end off with a nice hara that Rabbeinu Manoach on the Rambam. The Rambam brings down this halach of not going into a churva. Interestingly, he brings it down in Hilchos Tefillah. The way the Rambam says it is that you're not allowed to daven in a churva. So before Shemayah, it's Kakam the Rambam brought it down that way. We're not going to go into that. But on that Rambam, in Hilchos Tefillah, Rabbeinu Manoach, he talks about this Gemara, where the Gemara says that you don't go in B'nai HaChashad. He mentions, like I said, Rabbeinu Yoinu brings in the pasuk v'isim nikim Hashem v'Yisrael, that a yid has an achrayis to avoid things that even that have the semblance of being a ma'isa aveira. Rabbeinu Manoach says that there's a concept in the Torah of cheshed b'cheshevim, that you're not allowed to if you suspect somebody of an aveira and he really didn't do it. So the Gemara says that you get saras for that. Right, there's this strong expression in Chazal about the evil of being cheshed b'cheshevim. Zok Rabbeinu Manoach, what's called k'sherim? Right, it's very bad to be cheshed b'cheshevim. What's called k'sherim? K'sherim doesn't just mean somebody that doesn't do averus. K'sherim means somebody that acts in a way that he doesn't look like he's doing averus. But once a person is doing things that involve chshad, so then he loses that status, that protection, that you're not allowed to be chayshid him. And then, if somebody's chayshid, if a person does something that looks questionable, and people go saying, oh, he did an aveira, they're not going to be punished. That's not called chayshid b'chayrim. It could be the silim mitzvah, there's a mission in Avos about being down the chavs chos. But that which Chazal say that it's an aveira to be chayshid b'chayrim, b'chayrim means people that avoid things that look bad. But if you're not makpid to avoid things that look bad, then others don't have to be makpid not to be cheshed you of an aveira. All right.
Thank you.